All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Oh, the audio video Zoom line. And we've got Stuart Turley on the line with us. How you doing today, sir? Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely. You look fantastic too, I might add.
Well,
How are you back?
I'm not sure if you're aware, but I had some health battles, and then I was stage four cancer, this is stage two cancer, stage zero cancer after fighting the health community for 6 years. Got a clean bill of health, right? And then within 6 months, I started getting alopecia. So the cosmic chemo kicked in, and I
Oh my
ended up
goodness.
becoming completely hairless, and to where, yeah, like on my arms and downstairs below the equator and everything, man. And
Wow.
so I thought, you know what? This is why. It's a true story. It's a true story. So I avoided chemo and radiation. So I was
Right.
able to do that through my cancer battle. And when I was sitting in the radiation meeting with this doctor, I remember thinking about I didn't want to lose my hair
Right.
because I had such thick, like hair beauticians comment on, your hair
Right.
luster thickness. And then afterwards I thought, boy, that was pretty vain. So I call it my cosmic chemo. That's what my alopecia was, cosmic chemo.
Got it.
So anyway, I haven't been doing too many video interviews, so this is my second one in 2 years. So
No way.
yeah, I did one public appearance, but I wore a hat. And the other one I did, I actually combed my hair because my hair's actually grown back now, but it's gray. And
Well, I tell you what, for your podcast listeners, I've got this problem called flesh-colored hair because I get sunburned with my scalp.
Oh, look at that. Boy, that's nice. You can looks like something you can bowl right down an alley, right? Just kind
Oh,
of
absolutely.
yeah. You know, it's so weird because when we get to this world that we're in now, I actually am trained in the media through education and also through just pedigree and everything. I've been in the media since I was 10 years old. And so to be on video, we've got makeup, we've got
Oh, yeah.
hairstylists. So this whole thing about wearing a hat, letting some, hair stick out, I'm not a big fan of this, if you will. So that's why I kind of stick on the face for radio and
But
vibe for radio.
that's the only thing COVID did for us is there's two things. And your channel and I know my channel, I saw a huge increase because of the lying mainstream media.
Yes.
And then COVID actually made it so much easier for me to get further reach to people, and average people started becoming comfortable. So, Jason, there's nothing wrong with being yourself.
This is one of the positives that came out. With everything, you got the yin and the yang, you've got a positive, you got a negative. And so that is one of the things I have noticed. Even like a lot of my whether it be professional colleagues actually, or people that I've looked up to, or people that I've worked with on a regular basis. For me, I'm still into the sports world a lot of times. So like, I'll watch a Rich Eisen or a Colin Cowherd, or actually my co-host on Wattage Wednesday was Colin Cowherd's old producer in
Oh,
Oregon.
how fun.
Yeah, Steve Bakken, who's the former mayor of Bismarck. And we do Wattage Wednesday every Wednesday on Town Square Media's Talk of the Town. But even they've gotten into where, they don't shower or they don't shave. They'll wear the hats
Wow.
backwards now with the video type of a thing. And, we kind of grew up, like I said, where if you were going to be on camera, even in radio, I mean, take a look at Imus. Imus was the early adapter,
Right.
and they still showered. They still showed up. They're not wearing a Marilyn Monroe t-shirt after taking their dog outside. You can't hide behind the Wizard of Oz of radio anymore because podcasting is now video, Stu. Stu, is it Stu or Stuart?
Stu's good.
Okay.
My middle name's Pid. So,
Stu
Stupid.
Pid, yeah.
No,
You know,
but
I actually knew a guy and his last name was Pedasso. Yeah, he had a good
that's
buddy named
funny.
Hayward too. His last name was Jabroni. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
I like it. Well, actually, I was gonna be interviewing live Congressman Victoria Spratz, and she is from Ukraine, but she is actually a congresswoman. So I actually am wearing a coat and, getting ready to interview her. Now we're doing it at 3:30, and so I got to interview you. So normally I am very comfortable no matter what it is. So actually, because of a congressman's interview.
And so that's actually one of the reasons for the interview was to talk about this interview that you have. Explain to the listeners out there as I shift into more of a serious mode here. Explain the topic, the subject matter, and how you and her connected, because you're going to be talking about some international policy, aren't you?
Yes. And so it's pretty interesting. I've got a couple coalitions of politicians that have reached out. They like reach, and B, people want to talk to people they can trust, and executives and politicians want to come back on podcasts if they have fun. Chris Wright, the CEO of Liberty Energy, I just interviewed, and it's about the third time I've interviewed him with Doomberg, and they've both been back several times. So a lot of my CEOs that I've interviewed over all these years, I love coming back. We have a great time. I met her through one of these groups. And so the same another group, the Americans for Prosperity, I'm now trying to confirm with Ted Cruz, Senator Cruz, on May 30th, and I'm trying to go live there. People want to hear the truth. They're tired of absolutely being lied to. And I could not be more respectful for immigrants coming into this country. I love immigrants, legal immigrants. And she, Victoria, a Congresswoman Victoria Spratz, is a legal immigrant from Ukraine. And she voted no for no money going to Ukraine. I'm done sending money to Ukraine. I agree. Sorry.
Well, no, I hear you. It's
And this
interesting
interview
because,
is now over. Thank you very much.
oh no, I love being political. It's just, with the crude life, so many different oil and gas personalities were political that
Right.
we went the non-political way, and that's actually why our audience grew. We would
Right.
get emails every day and every week that would say, "Thank you so much for just writing this article on this." And
Right.
honestly, it wouldn't get a lot of likes, but you know
Right.
what? Oh man, it would get a lot of reads, and it would get a lot
Exactly.
of downloads, and it would get a lot of kudos. But pretty soon, it wasn't getting supported anymore, and we started noticing a lot of support was even going towards the politics. And so, we've really kind of grown this to be where we've gone down the non-political route, and so we've created a lot of trust. And one of the
I am
things,
not a political. I don't want to cut you off, but I want to
no.
say right now, I'm a Christian first, an American, a dad, and I am absolutely agnostic about politicians. And my personal opinion right now, all of our politicians are evil. Prove me
Well,
otherwise. I'm sorry.
no, and that's okay, but because where I was going with this is that when I first got into this industry, about 12 years ago,
Right.
and so my research started 15 years ago, the energy industry was not political.
No.
It not even close to where it was today. In fact, when I was growing up, the only thing about politics was the gas prices. And by the way, this was after Exxon Valdez had like a big spill. And there was
Right.
more jokes about a drunk sailor than there was about problems with the oil spill. Okay. I mean, just to let you know how really people were okay with it, because
Right.
there was always progress being made. And all of a sudden the progress wasn't good enough. And
Oh,
now
man.
we gotta like change the narrative. And so I saw this change, this political narrative happened, this change to where, you know, the crude life, that's why we started these other brands. We have the Carbon Conversation, which, oh my
Isn't that
word.
great?
So I actually, so it started as the Carbon Conference. Okay.
Right.
And then it evolved now to the Carbon Conversation, so we could do it online and
Right.
at conferences. Okay.
Right.
That, honestly, I'm not kidding you, 45% open rate.
Nice.
Anything that we send out has a 45% open rate. So
That's
when,
extremely
and so,
huge.
you know, we do a lot of obviously cross editorial, cross content when it comes to like the oil and gas industry. You mentioned Liberty.
Right.
You know, I think actually Chris Wright has done a very good job of being non-political, even though he's
Yes.
being political. But he's not being political. That's the thing. That's the difference. Because when you approach it the way he is from a non-egocentric point of view, you can
He's
have a
a
conversation.
humanitarian. He
Yes.
is a humanitarian. Chris
Right.
Wright, when I met Chris maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I saw his presentation on humanitarian and delivering everyone from eliminating energy poverty. I love Chris Wright. Absolutely think the world of Chris Wright. And I modeled, instead of the podcast being, you know, something oil and gas, I want this Energy Newsbeat is my podcast. And I want to eliminate energy poverty. The only way that you can eliminate energy poverty is to have low cost, abundant energy that has the least amount of impact on the environment and sustainable through not printing money. And by not printing money, it means it can be fiscally sustainable. I'm all in on all forms of energy, oil, gas, nuclear, wind, solar. It does not matter to me. Let's take care of humanity first. And that's what Chris Wright does so well. I mean, you can tell by your podcast list, I get excited talking about ending energy poverty. I get excited. And I don't care if you're a Democrat. I don't care if you're a Republican. I don't care. If you're a human, I want to talk to you.
And
If
that's
you're an
just it.
American, that's what it's all about.
There are some things that do transcend politics, and energy is one of those. Food is another one of. I mean, we're talking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs here, the basics. And I mean, can you imagine if we went to another planet and said we had to charge people to do all this different stuff, and we had to, you know, I mean, just try to explain our system for the basic needs and everything.
Oh, it's pathetic.
So this afternoon or morning, let's see, what time is it right now? So it was about 2 hours ago. I was on KLXX AM Super Talk 1270 Town Square Bismarck, and we were talking about. I brought up Chris Wright with Liberty because.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So you know, there's like all things. You've got some good leadership, you've got some bad leadership, and you've got
Yep.
some ones that are just trying to actually figure it out, okay? And
Yep.
and it can go different ways at different times. So the example I gave, we were talking about some of the bad leadership, and we don't have to really get into that on this podcast, but
Right.
we like to end with some positives, and so we talked about some good leadership when it comes to oil and gas and carbon
Yep.
management and being able to understand the evolution that's happening.
Right.
So the example I gave is that, you know, 20 years ago, I was a publisher. 30 years ago, I was in the newspaper business as a small business owner and a reporter. Okay.
And 35 years ago, they did not teach you how to do a presentation on an overhead projector when you
no,
graduated.
I mean,
college.
So, but I basically went from the newspaper industry to the magazine industry to the multimedia industry, then to the media industry, and now I'm actually in the content industry. So
yep.
I've had to reinvent myself at least five times. And so when John Gibson from One Oak and Harold Hamm from Continental Resources, and what other name can I drop real quick here? James Volker from Whiting, when they actually used the word paradigm shift 12 years ago, I listened.
Yep.
Because I
Oh,
got
yeah.
my ass kicked in the media paradigm shift between
yeah.
2007 and 2012, when you take a look at every newspaper in America had a monopoly for 100 years, and within 5 years they went bankrupt. That's a paradigm shift, folks. And that happened to the oil and gas industry. So, you know, I paid attention. So what do you have? You have Occidental right now being called a carbon management company. You have Liberty Oil being called Liberty Energy. And actually, they're just Liberty now. They don't really go by Liberty Energy very much.
Isn't that great?
Take a look at their logo.
And he loves it. And he loves nuclear. And he's
that's what I'm saying.
And he's out helping Robert Bryce with the movie, The Juice, the series.
Oh, good for it. And Robert Bryce is another winner.
Isn't he great? I love Robert Bryce.
You see, these are positive people. And so the example I gave was that, okay, first of all, ExxonMobil deserves an A+ when it comes to figuring out what is going on in the energy / carbon / ag industry, because it's a triple tower of power. You've got energy, ag, and carbon all working together now, okay? Right. Whether it's through ethanol or biomass or LG, whatever it is, Occidental's figured it out, and so has Exxon. And that's why Exxon bought Denbury, was for the carbon management business.
Exactly.
I mean, point in case right there. And so what have they done? They've actually gotten on the forefront by saying, listen, we're going to now educate the steel industry. Look at this. We're going to go here and we're going to educate the firefighters on how to do emergency response. Exxon, A+.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. So Liberty, same thing. So
the cool thing is, I'm sorry, you know what happens with two podcast hosts get together? We get so excited, we start running down the road yelling, yay!
Well, for me, I get excited because I got to do all this within 5 minutes on the radio. And so I got to try to put 50 pounds of potatoes in a 5 pound sack, man. And so that's why I'm saying it's difficult at times. So I get excited and I get
that
going.
Sounds like one of my college dates.
But did so the example I gave with Chris Wright though is that so they came out a few years ago with the electric frack. Okay,
isn't that
the
great?
Electric frack. And I honestly I'm not sure if they got big government subsidy for it or not. I don't think they did. But I think a lot of this was based
on. Think about that. He's thinking nukes next.
Yeah, I know.
Small nuclear nukes. And by the way,
he got awarded one of the carbon projects in North Dakota, and they got the primacy there. Okay, so like Louisiana, they can move ahead without the EPA on a lot of these carbon management projects. Right. So, here's what I said word for word. When I heard that Liberty got awarded the carbon project, it brought a smile to my face.
Yeah.
Because Chris Wright is on the forefront. Now, I have no idea if he got subsidies or how the electric frack came, but that told me that he was committed to making a change without being radical, by just doing the logical humanitarian type things. So now he's getting into the carbon management side of things. So he's very progressive.
And what we're talking about, Jason, is the fact that take a look at Total Energy, as we say, and it's a Texas, Oklahoma way to talk, Total Energy. They and the European big oil companies went left. BP, they said, we're getting out of oil and gas. We're getting out of everything. And they failed. Chevron and Exxon and said, oh, by the way, we're going to stay our course. And you mentioned Oxy, and she was leading Oxy brilliantly into the carbon management, carbon capture. Mm-hmm. And I believe that anybody that is going to take government funds is going to need to get into that carbon, even if carbon is either right or wrong, whether or not we need enough CO2. I think CO2 is not the bad man in the room, my personal opinion, but those that are going to manage that are going to be able to use government funds mm-hmm. and survive politically. So Oxy, Exxon, Chevron are all doing great things. And old Beyond Petroleum, or BP, is now getting the head into the shovel of the back of the head so hard, their eyes are getting popped out and they're having to come back around. And now they're saying, oh, wait a minute. We were just kidding about getting out of oil and gas. So we need oil and gas for a very long time. And the ESG movement did a great thing by getting the CEOs, the new generation of CEOs that are in charge, the Nick Dulleses from CNX and all of the other great natural gas producers out there, all of these folks are doing a great job getting returns back to their investors. The Chris Wrights, the Toby Rices, all of these guys are giving back their money to their stakeholders, reducing everything in. And the European, why is TotalEnergies buying? They bought so many natural gas power plants in Texas, enough to match four nuclear reactors. So Total is now buying in. And then you have the Japanese that are buying all the way through the chain, the M&A activity. They're buying the LNG export facilities all the way through to the Haynesville. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to own their own all the way through to get it through. People need energy security. And so you take a look at how all this is. We could talk for hours on the whole shifting model that's going out there. And the winners are going to embrace carbon capture, carbon management, and ethical, low-cost deliverables.
Ethical energy is a very interesting direction for a lot of different companies, because the carbon management industry is going two different ways. Okay. Yep. I'm glad you brought up Occidental, because, you know, they were, from my understanding, they were the first one to really start calling themselves a carbon management company.
Yep.
And I could tell you, I got literally escorted out of an office back in 2012 in Dallas, Texas, on the, 15th, 17th floor. Sitting in an office with four C-suite executives. You know, I imagine their combined salaries were seven figures between the four of them, right? And when I said that, you know, oil and gas was the new cigarettes, I mean, they looked at me, and like I said, security was up 30 seconds later ushering me out. Wow. And I'm going, I didn't realize that was still an elephant in the room here. I thought we were trying to figure out how to combat this problem. Well, a week later, it was on the front page of the Wall Street Tribune.
Nice. Okay?
And so I'm not saying it to brag. I'm saying it because what Vicky showed me is she went away from the tribal mentality that oil and gas had. Chris Wright showed me he wanted to go away from the tribal mentality when he called
Nick
himself Liberty Energy.
And Toby Rice are doing that up there with natural gas.
And the reason I know this is because when I was in the oil and gas industry, keep in mind, I come from agriculture and media, okay?
Right.
I went out and lived in the Bakken oil fields for a year and a half and lived in a food truck, okay? And did my radio show from a food truck so I could embed myself and understand what it was to be a roughneck. I'm not going to go do an article on skydiving without skydiving, right? So I actually lived out there for 6 months before I even did one thing, oil and gas. And one thing I realized really quickly was the oil and gas companies do a lot for communities.
Yep.
But at the same time, like anything, when you have that much unbelievable opportunity, you can have a lot of corruption and you can have a lot of entitlement and enablement. And so what's happening in the oil and gas industry is that, like I said, a dozen years ago, I used to do a feature for a couple national magazines, and I called it Energy Scene is what I called it, Energy Scene.
Okay.
Well, I got yelled at by a lot of people in oil and gas because I don't know oil and gas. It's not energy, it's oil and gas. Well, then 2 years later, these same people are yelling, you know, trying to remind me, make sure you use the word energy now. It's not oil and gas.
Okay. I'm going to brag on myself for half a second. And that is when I was working for Intercom, which had the big investor conferences and everything else, they had oil and gas 360. And I'd said, guys, we got to change this and get it to energy. And they said, no. Well, I went and started it, energy. Look at oilprice.com right now. They're now putting out renewable stories and they can't break their brand.
Right. And so like with the crude life, we actually, okay, so we understood our pigeon a few years ago.
Right.
And because we were always non-political, we stayed that way. And because we were really an anomaly,
Right.
And so we were able to do a lot of these different things. We've had some video opportunities in the past. And so now we're actually going to be exploring those video opportunities this summer. So we're actually going to be doing a completely new presentation
Isn't
come
that neat?
probably July. With the crude life. And so we're going to, but because we're going to go all in with the oil and gas, but on a different direction, totally
Nice.
different direction.
I can't
So,
wait to see it.
well, when you think about the crude life, hey, you'll probably see us at a classic car show. You'll
Isn't
probably
that
see,
great?
yeah, you'll probably see us, around a few classic car engines, the crude life, maybe get our motor running a little
Oh,
bit. And
yeah.
because we have our established audience and we're going to keep doing that because we have a certain responsibility now with the new program, Today in Energy.
Yeah.
So we after 555 episodes, episodic, brand new weekly episodes of The Crude Life going to different radio stations across a five-state affiliate network. We changed the name to Today, This Week in Energy,
Yep.
and we didn't lose one affiliate, not one. In
Isn't
fact,
that great?
that's fantastic. In
Congratulations.
fact, what we've done is we've opened up to new communities now. Because the name The Crude Life pigeonholed us before,
Right.
now Columbus, Ohio might take us. Now, what's that name? Some any California city might take us. You know
It's
what I mean?
about energy, and
It's about energy.
if we all understand it's about ending energy poverty,
But
it opens up the conversation about everything.
here's the
I
beauty part.
applaud you. Well done.
Here's the beauty part is that if you go to thecrudelife.com or
Yep.
if you go to thecrudelife.substack.com, we have a 12-year documentation of trying to educate about the carbon management petroleum connection.
Wow.
Okay. In fact, the third article we did, we talked about the ag and energy connection. There ain't nothing new under the sun. Ag and energy are intertwined. And so we've been, we so the for us, it's a very seamless and very easy transition. And so when we look at this week in energy, for example,
Yep.
when we bring in the geothermal people, guess what? We understand where oil and gas is coming from because for 12 years, we've been
Yep.
telling the solar industry, we've been telling the wind industry, we've
We
been
love
telling the
it.
general public that guess what? The oil and gas industry really knows what they're doing. Who do you think has been trying to make the environment cleaner? Do you think Exxon wants to keep spilling out there in the Pacific outside Alaska? No. Do you think BP wants to keep spilling down in the Gulf? No. And guess what? The agriculture industry is the same way. They got
Yep.
anhydrous ammonia spills all the time. What's the air? What's the Matt Rose and the BNSF, Burlington Northern? They're
Right.
constantly trying to improve their security and their safety as well. So when I look at these companies and when they're trying to consistently make things better, that's what we try to mimic at the Crude Life. And so this week in energy,
Right.
we're very excited because we're now going to be offering it into new areas that would never accept us before because,
And
we're.
it's brilliant on your part.
Well, thank you. And by the way, we don't lose any of our Crude Life audience either. We actually gain it because now, like I said, now when we start going to classic car shows, well, that's a whole new audience now. That's a
Right.
whole new audience. And I mean, by the way, the Crude Life at classic car shows is going to be a blast. I mean, we've got like three or four already lined up for this summer. I mean,
How fun.
and there ain't no EV classic car, baby. That
I
ain't
was sitting there,
happening
I
for
was
another
about to
20
come, I
years.
was, there is no EV classic. Now, the Cybertruck is going to be an EV classic DeLorean.
You know what that looks like? And I'm not kidding you. It looks like some sort of DeLorean inbred. It looks like something from, some Volvo DeLorean inbred thing happened down there. And I'm not trying to discount,
I
Musk
love
or
Elon.
anything along
No,
those lines. So,
I love
anyway.
Elon, and I think that the EVs are going to make it under Toyota's hybrid, and I think that Elon is going to make it, and I think that China is going to overrun everybody with everything else. Anybody else is not going to make it. So you're wasting your money if you think that you're going to buy anything. If it's not a Tesla, don't buy it. If it's if and boy, I am. The only reason I want a Cybertruck, I want to go on record right now, is because it's bulletproof. I mean, that's the only reason I want a Cybertruck. And it does not work. People are losing their. Did you see the one guy that lost his, he almost lost his fingers because the hood came
I
down? He
did
got
see that.
his
Yeah, that's.
Sorry.
I mean, in all honesty, the EVs are. There should be a lot more discussion on EVs because of what's going on, and I'm not even talking about from the blood minerals, you know,
Oh, absolutely. Child
the
abuse.
humanitarian part of it. But if you've ever talked to an EV owner, they don't keep them for really more than a year. They generally take them back because of the EV anxiety. They're
Right.
unreliable, especially up north. I've never
Yeah.
known anybody to keep one for a winter, for a full
And in
winter.
West Texas, there ain't no chargers. Uh,
No,
my
and
my father-in-law went from Dallas to West Texas. He had to park, I think, 2 or 3 miles away in order to charge his car from his hotel. There was no Uber service, and so he had to walk. Here's a 90-year-old man walking around 2 or 3 miles at night trying to get his Tesla to charge, and then he couldn't find it back. And then he tried to come up to Oklahoma to my lake house up here. He had to go to Fort Smith to charge, and a normal 4-hour drive took 8.
You
So.
start working for the car. It's there. Anybody who's ever gone through the actual motions of it doesn't want to go through it again. It's very cumbersome, but it's very unintuitive. There's the intuition just is not there yet. And California really dropped the ball on this. And this is where I get into my conspiracy mind. And we're not able to really get into this on the crude life too much, but one of the reasons I got into this oil and gas space was because I'm primarily what would be known as a Goldwater Republican or a libertarian.
Right.
I believe that the government should stay out of my checkbook and stay out of my personal life. I believe in roads. I believe in roads.
And
I believe,
security.
you know, I believe in stop
Protect the
signs to a
borders.
certain degree.
Yeah. Protect the borders,
I mean, there's certain basics that I do, and then beyond that, I'm just really not on board with. I believe as local as you can get, the better, because they know what's happening. And so when I take a look at what happened, excuse me, let me back up for a second. I got in the oil and gas industry because I really love capitalism, and when I say I love capitalism, a capitalist gives back. So if you're a capitalist, a true capitalist, you have to have a value system. And I was
Right.
baptized as a Christian, and so I pull my value system primarily from the Ten Commandments. And
Yep.
so for me, a good capitalist not only tithes 10% to some sort of humanitarian-based environment, whether it's a church, whether it's a nonprofit, whether it's a food bank, but he
Right.
also ties 10% at least to his community, whether through volunteering or whether through some other
Right.
similar thing, because that community is what got you to where you're at. That
Exactly.
church spiritually got you to where you're at by making good decisions. So to me, that's one of the reasons I've always enjoyed capitalism. And when you take a look at some of the best capitalists, they do those things. They do those things.
Exactly. I applaud everything you just said.
Well, thank you, because where I'm going next with this is that where what I saw happen over the last decade was I saw the government take over the oil and gas industry very much like they took over the ag industry.
Yep.
So farmers, they you, go ask a farmer, go see if he wants to go plant what he wants to plant. No, he's got to plant whatever the government tells
The
him he's going to plant. And
problem I have is you nailed it with the libertarian and taking a look at it that way. The legislation through regulatory actions is abysmal.
it is. It's
And I did
it's.
not vote for these chowderheads, and these chowderheads running the Department of Energy do not understand energy. They do not
No.
understand markets. Why in the world is the great Scott Sheffield being blasted by the FE, when they sells Pioneer and they're saying that he is now eligible to be on the board because of colluding with OPEC? You have got to be kidding me. That man has the right to protect his employees that are now working over there at Exxon, and they're trying to shove that down his throat, saying he was consorting to ruin oil and gas prices when our own president is selling our SPR to China. Who's making money off of that Chinese?
It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's
I'm getting
absolutely.
worked up.
I know. I could tell. Well, and that's the part that makes me a little bit leery about the carbon industry, because what essentially it's turned into a loop. Okay, so it's just like an ag. An ag, if you want to go plant corn, you get a subsidy. If you want to go plant, oats, well, you're not going to get insurance or a subsidy. So, good luck. And so you're sitting there guarding your oats all day from wild horses, okay, or whatever it might be. Same things happen in oil and gas because they know where most of the oil is. Whether it's through any sort of core samples or LIDAR or whatever technology. So it's become farming. So they've essentially backdoored it just like they did with the agriculture industry. And they did it through banking and another of regulations in a number of different ways. Well, now enter the carbon management industry. There's not one person I've talked to, okay, and I've talked to at least 25. I mean, we're talking about people that worked on Burrow Island in Australia with some of the original projects. We're talking about the people that did the first on-site carbon capture for ethanol. We're talking about Brad Crabtree with the Department of Czar, with the Department of Energy. And so we've talked to a lot of different people, and essentially the government is facilitating the entire industry. So that is basically where we're at. Now, where is the motivation for the entrepreneur now? So your whole business model is getting that one government person to approve your project. It's no longer about building the better mousetrap anymore. And so that's the one thing that I really do caution people on, is that I said this about 10 years ago when I started seeing what was happening with the regulations through Obama. Okay. Was, oh, they're trying to end capitalism here. And oil and gas industry is the last bastion of capitalism. It was the last industry where a roughneck without a high school education could figure out how to make a vibrating tube go twice as fast for twice as cheap because he's worked on a rig for 15 years. And all of a sudden, within a year, he's a president of a small business. He's a leader in his community. He's a millionaire because he's an entrepreneur. That's all gone now. That's like completely gone now. And it's sad. And I've seen it happen. Now I'm getting worked up, Stuart. I'm getting worked up. Talk me down off the ledge, man. Because, I mean, I love
Let's
this
go to a car
country. I
show
love
and
this
talk to the crew.
industry.
I'm going to drive out. I'm going to pick you up in my Tesla, in my Cybertruck, and we're going to go to a car show. But it'll
But,
take me about a week to get there.
so that's the part that really, that my conspiracy mind, getting back to that, is that when I look at California, California's got all seasons. It's got the coast, it's got the, inland, it's got agriculture, it's got mountains, it's got all kinds, it's got everything. People, like, there are people who literally have never left California because they got everything there. And I lived in California, so I get it. Now, California's got, I think, 87,000 different kinds of petroleum or something like that. It's like seriously, like 60 different kinds. And so I understand the push to have that EV plug-in, and it doesn't matter what powers it. It doesn't matter if it's nuclear. It doesn't matter if it's ethanol. It doesn't matter if it's coal. As long as it's the same universal power plug-in, I understand that. But the hybrid worked. The hybrid worked. Like the people loved it. The environment loved it. The marketplace loved it. The workplace loved it. But the state said no, because in the 90s they said, hey, listen, we need, I think, 10% of the marketplace to be electric or something like that. And they didn't hit it 100%, but the markers were there, and they thumped him even more. But I don't know. I get worked up because I see what's happening as just this big, like, all of a sudden arm wrestling thing coming down where they're going to end capitalism, they're going to end energy security, and our food security is tied to this too. So when I get worked up, man, I get really worked up here. So what do you guys talk about on your show?
I just appreciate you and everything that you're doing. One of the things that I'm doing is I'm trying to find the funding to help take podcasts and other groups. We do David Blackman and Ray Trevino and others and a couple doctors, but we're trying to also help as a side business to in capitalism help the homeschools, because our public schools have gotten so bad that all of my energy content is around the humanitarian aspect. And so we're working out things like the Digital Wildcatters are now using the energynewsbeat.co to help train their AI. I want to help as many people as I can learn the truth about true energy, about true carbon capture, about true what is an economic value. So I love talking to all folks that are human. Politicians that want to get their story out that feel that they are being not given a fair shake by the media. I want to talk to you. If you are a Democrat, if you're a Republican, but you care about humanity, you care about America, I want to talk to you. I also talk to a lot of folks from Africa, around the world. NJ Anuk, the head of the African Energy Chamber, fabulous man. I'm trying to help him out as well too, because why in the world are we trying to force renewable garbage on Africa when we should be bringing in natural gas plants, bring those pipelines out there, get the jobs? Do you know how much more money the United States could make from a capitalistic standpoint by elevating Africans out of poverty by creating markets? Whoa, wait a minute. Eliminate energy poverty, create more business, create local jobs, create more jobs in the U.S. Wait a minute. So if we create methodology for teaching the next generation, we will have a better chance at being able to do some of these things, because you nailed it in a few of your little tidbits and sound bites that I've found. We've got to get to that next generation. So I'm about trying to help get to that next generation. That was a weird way to answer your question, but
but that's an important point. It's a very important point. It's a drumbeat that we've done for a long time. You know, we did the Kids in Capitalism. We sponsored that for a number of years. We got kids a tour of refineries, and
isn't that great?
Yeah, I mean, Linda McMahon. You know, we got kids to meet Linda McMahon when she was a small business administrator, for example.
Neat.
And so, yeah, and we'd bring kids to dairy farms, so they got to bottle feed cows, and you know, they got to stick their hands inside the actual stomach and things along those lines. And so, just to help them understand the way the supply chain works and the way a lot of the entrepreneur side works. My issue has been trying to find support to actually do that. A lot of people like to talk about it. A lot of people like to do a quick post about it or do a quick like about it, but there's not a lot of people that like to support it, either financially or volunteer or put the time in along a lot of what we're talking about. And a number of different examples I have on that, but whether it's, you know, going to your local schools, like what we've done, you know, with our Johnny Green, Earth Champion, going to the schools, talking about oil and gas, you know, as the renewables ain't doable without fossil fuelables, you know, that type of thing, having some fun with it. So we can do it on a real local level. But at the same time, another example that I've given out for now 8 years is when you take a look at where the oil and gas industry as a whole, and keep in mind, there are a lot of very smart people making a lot of money that were trained to connect with people on a very existential level. And so
Right.
to me, this is a big failure for the industry. This is probably the biggest failure out of all parts of the industry, bigger than Exxon Valdez and BP put up. And my thank you for that, by the way, because my example is quite simple. If you want to connect with somebody, go to a college football game.
Exactly.
I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are. If you're North Dakota State Bison, or you're the University of Texas Longhorn, or either Miami of Ohio, whatever their name is now. I think the Redbirds, they changed their name. And as soon as I said Miami of Ohio, I went, oh, crap, they changed their name. Shoot, they were the Redskins, and now they're something else. So anyway, so I think they're the Redbirds now. But in all honesty, college football has Yep. brought to us college game day. It's brought to us bowl games. It's,
Exactly.
It was one of the first sporting spectacles to go beyond just a college football fan, okay?
Oh,
whether
yeah.
it's tailgating or the bowl games. You take a look at the bowl game sponsors. There's only been one in the history of all the bowl games, and that's Valero, because of the Alamo Bowl being in San Antonio. Valero's from San Antonio. Otherwise, my argument is they probably wouldn't have sponsored it. But because the Alamo Bowl is in San Antonio, and that's where Valero is headquartered, they did sponsor it for, I think, a couple of years.
Right.
You take away that one sponsorship.
But here's
nobody.
I applaud you, and I want to give you a man hug here over the Zoom man hug here. But the Jamie Dimons of the world.
I got my Marilyn Manson and my, by the way, and on this side, it's Prince.
Okay, so there you go.
I've got my very hippie, my hippie capitalist attire on today here, and the crude life. Okay, let's keep going here. Go ahead.
But
sorry.
You sit back and I forgot my point, but you sit back and you kind of think, where was
college football about getting back into it, a marketing.
But you think of the oil, Jamie Dimon. I gotta give Jamie Dimon a hug and a shout out, because he defended, when he stood up in front of Congress and said, if we get rid of oil and gas, it's going to be death to America. However he phrased it was a great way to phrase it. Oil and gas executives have not stood up for their people. And you take a CEO, like we've mentioned a bunch of the CEOs that do, and they have transcended into that. And I got to give Toby Rice a shout out, because he is all over the place talking about the goodness of natural gas and EQT. And the Rice brothers have done a great job doing that. The oil and gas has done a poor job defending itself against the climate crap that's being shoveled down everybody's throat. And is it climate change? Let's not even get into that. Climate change happens. But I got tickled when Dubai spent $2.5 million on cloud seeding and then had billions of dollars of damage in the flood that they just had. Yeah, that was climate change. Cost them $2.5 million for the insurance companies to pay out. But we have to defend the great natural gas. Take a look at the deindustrialization of Germany going on right now because of the dependency of Russia. Russia is being tried to be pinned in. Who blew up Nord Stream? I don't even want to get into that one. I got my opinion. But when we sit back and look at the deindustrialization is intentional on Germany. Where that is going is a whole nother political can of worm. How could that have been stopped? Oil and gas companies in the European Union could have been stopping that ahead of time by the TotalEnergies, by having all these other folks not run away from the climate alarmists, and said they've bowed to them. And that is costing economies. That's costing lives. That is killing people. So when CEOs don't stand up for what is right, people die. Sorry.
That's where ethical energy comes in.
You and I are on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, so when you take a look at ethical energy, there's a lot of different directions to go, because energy can also be in the boardroom. energy is also in the office place. But yes. When you take a look at ethical energy, look at the evolution. Okay, so there was a time when we used to use whale and seal oil, and we
oil saved the whales the first time.
Well, actually, coal did too. And when you go and take a look at the history of coal,
yeah,
the people rejected coal. They didn't want coal. And then it was coal actually that got us off whale oil. So they actually, the energy industry had to, because they didn't want to use whale oil. The people wanted the easy whale oil because it was easy. It was what they always knew.
How about the wind and the green movement on the offshore winds? I'm sorry for going nuts here.
That's wind is
the Amish, right whales.
The Amish are more advanced than we are with wind energy.
The right whales, they now have more permits out there to kill the right whales than there are as a species. The right whales have a toe tag on their flipper for being executed and run out. Where is the outrage? Can oil and gas save the right whales? I don't think they can, because of the religion of the New York, our Governor Hochul. Why is it that New York and California are failing? Why has Texas got one half of the cost for those two states? Texas is half. It's because we use natural gas, coal, nuclear, wind, solar. We could even be lower if we just eliminated and ejected wind and solar. We could get rid of a lot of that cost, but we do use it in Texas. I love Texas, but we are not standing up for the children. We're not standing up for the animals, and we're not standing up for agriculture, and we're not standing up for, I'm sorry, I got to shut up.
No, you're on the right soapbox, and you got my mind going, because I've never thought of it to where, you know, when crude oil and coal, fossil fuels, and I call it more traditional energy but coal and crude oil essentially got society off of whales. And that was a big deal. Okay. That's huge. I think most people are okay with that. I think really do. I think people like whales. I never thought of it to where now the environmentalists are trying to get us back to killing whales again, because the template's done.
Right.
The golden eagle.
And eagles. And bats. Do you know how many eagles are dying?
Yeah,
bats.
They're on the extinct list in the Southwest. And in 2016, Obama signed an executive order so wind companies wouldn't get sued anymore, because so many were tied up in federal court because they killed bald eagles.
And it's not because the windmill comes around. It's because when they fly through the vacuum, explodes their hearts and their chest, the bats. We now have mosquito problems. People are getting mosquito problems because it's killing millions of bats. Dr. Patrick Moore, I love Dr. Patrick Moore. He was on my podcast twice. I'm going to have him back. That man was a co-founder of Greenpeace. He was out in front of the big oil tankers trying to stop oil tankers. Mm-hmm. He was also trying to stop nuclear proliferation. But he got out of Greenpeace at the 15-year mark because it was hijacked. Greenpeace was hijacked by left-wing nut jobs. Dr. Patrick Moore is a hero. He is my kind of guy. He was out trying to save humanity. When I was growing up, I remember Greenpeace. I thought they were just a bunch of wacky, but it was because the media portrayed them that way.
And what ends up happening? Now we're back to ethical energy. And so when people start going towards the money over the ethics, this is what ends up happening. And so that's why I said before, you know, ethics is really, where do you pull your values from? And most people, they do come from some sort of ethics, whether it's the Christian Bible or, you know, the Jewish faith, or maybe it's even Hinduism, or maybe it's even, you know, Muslims for a certain degree. there is, you know, I don't know if all 10 commandments we agree on, but at least probably 6 out of 10, we can at least get down to the golden rule, you know, that do unto others type of a thing. So when you start looking at somebody's ethics
Right.
and you pull away their value system, now what you have is you've got a mouse and cheese situation. The money is the cheese, and the person without values is the mouse. That's one of the reasons that we're in where we're in today, because this new crop of people who have come in, they're acting like people without ethics, and they're just going and chasing the money. And so really, that's what worries me, because if you have, you know, different people with political agendas in charge of the money now, the honeypot, and they're saying, go over here, now go over here. Well, these people are just being led around, not even like lemmings, more like mice. And it's a little bit concerning to me. So it's very important to know where someone's value system comes from. Even if they're an atheist, hey, at least I know you believe in something, pal. At least I know you believe in nothing. Now I know what I'm dealing with. But for somebody to come out and present themselves, hey, I have this sort of value system, and then do the exact opposite. Well, how can you trust and deal with someone like that? It's very difficult. It's very hard. And so I look at that as one of the biggest problems we have right now, Stuart, is there's a real lack of a value system in our workplace. And a lot of people are abusing their public trust and their position of power because they just assume everybody has the same value system. You know, everybody
Oh, you
wants the
bet.
same private jet. Everybody wants the same, you know, inbred DeLorean Tesla truck type of a thing, you know? And not everybody wants that, you know? I mean, that's how it goes. But I do say this about wind energy, and I'd
What's
like to
that?
know your opinion on this because I think this could get some national traction. I believe the Amish are more advanced than we are when it comes to wind energy. It takes an Amish family probably a weekend to put up a windmill. They get water, and they can even power a pole barn if they want from that thing. We
Sure.
can't even keep our whales alive, man. We can't even get these things powering on the windiest days. So when I take a look at what the energy input is from the Amish and the energy output, why are we not asking them for our energy policy?
I think we ought to have an Amish Department of Energy
I think
secretary.
so.
And
Still fighting the power.
yay. Now here's what needs to happen. And I want to give your listeners a bit of encouragement. As men and as leaders of the family and as people, we need, as man, woman, child, we need to stand up for what's right. We need to also prepare for natural disasters. We've had several tornadoes in Oklahoma. We've had several things, but the grid is in danger. The grid is in danger from bad management and copious administration policies. I've interviewed a lot of people from around the world. Do everyone a favor. Please get several months worth of food ready. It does, you don't have to spend a lot of money. Have a plan. Get small generators. Be able to charge little solar panels, those kind of things. Be able to have a plan because we are going to have some tough times coming around the corner. And because what I know is about to happen, I've got Right now, I'm having another generator install propane. I've got propane, I've got wind, I've got solar, and I've got all these backup things being done. I have gardens, I have backup plans, I have communication plans. In case of any natural or man-made disaster, we need to be prepared because the government is not going to be there for you. I just want to share that out and say, be prepared. Be positive and don't worry, but be prepared.
Couldn't agree more. In fact, I'll even give you a testimonial and give you a little bit of a backup here because I have been a remote worker since the year 2000. I actually had a Gateway computer. If you remember Gateway computers, they were spotted like a cow, like a dairy cow, man. So yeah, never need another computer in your entire life. I think it had like about 480 megabytes of memory or something like that. Just, you know, huge. Anyway, so I've been remote working a long time. And so when I say to you what I'm about to say is, part of it is because of I'm a prepared person. I used to do a night show that was the lead in to George Norrie, Coast to Coast. So
oh, nice.
I'd have a lot of conspiracy people on as the lead in. And I would have mostly energy people and food people. And you know, I wouldn't really have the alien people on. I'd have more of the life skill George right. Norrie guests on. Because you know that made sense for us, you know, and being in the North Dakota, Minnesota, self-reliant area. So I travel with this. This here is a it's a battery. This here is a battery pack. I can plug it in, or I can hook it up to a solar panel, which I also travel with. So I've got a foldable solar panel.
I got the same thing. Jackery is the brand that I have. I have one for each car.
This is Jackery's at my other place, but this is this is I've got some boat batteries which I've transitioned to. So the crude life, actually, we've been off the grid for 3 years. Our office.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yep. And so we've been carbon negative, and that's what we tell people is the crude life. Actually, we've been carbon negative, and I mean because our footprint is very small because. We don't have a printing press anymore. We don't have a radio station anymore. We have content partnerships and we leverage all these different things. And so essentially because I was in office, we just went off the grid and said, let's just be ahead of the curve. And so anyway, so you've got the same similar things. Talk about your off the grid products because folks, you should just, I mean, seriously, take $1,000 and just get some sort of sample starter pack. Seriously.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Jackery is the brand I have.
Great brand.
In the four cabins that I have together, I have propane coming in. I have three more wind turbines coming in. I have all the solar panels coming in. And then I have a whole bank of batteries that are centrally located that can run. All of them, the propane generators can be run kind of like anyway. So I've designed it to be as efficient. It's expensive. But I've also brought in Elon's Starlink as a backup because the grid is going to be under attack as the WEF has said they're going to do that anyway. This is public knowledge. Public knowledge is also guarded from the standpoint that Trump put out executive order removing 30 major interconnects from the grid. They were supposed to have been removed under Trump. Day two. Okay. What day one was the Keystone Pipeline being cut, which is a whole nother discussion. The Keystone Pipeline being cut was day one executive order from Biden. But day two, they put those back in. These 30 major interconnects were in a Wall Street Journal article 2-3 years ago, and I've been on this ever since. They've been able to be remotely controlled and destroyed by the Chinese, period. Guess what happened? We just had a balloon go floating over the U.S. a little while ago. Do you remember that? Okay, what happened? Turns out several weeks ago, they said that the balloon had connected across the U.S., but after it was shot down, it was connected to a national carrier across the U.S. What was it doing? It was moving around and it was sending back IP addresses and capability of being able to be connected remotely to China. What has then happened? We had a second balloon. When that balloon was over Nevada, what happened? AT&T went down. The Homeland Security went down. FBI went down. LinkedIn went down. Reddit went down. All of these other things went down. Is this a coincidence? No, I don't think so, because it was all worked out. Now, let's also throw in the fact that you have China. Secretary Mayorkas last year went to the Darien Gap, where I'm going with this. The Darien Gap, I interviewed Michael Yon. Michael Yon is a war correspondent who had film of Secretary Mayorkas landing at a Chinese military camp in the Darien Gap. Not my words, this is his words, and he has film. We had 900 Chinese military age men come in before that into this country. We have now had 30,000 military age men come in from that war camp funded by the United States. The United States knows this. Now, you add in from this other piece over here that the potential for China to remotely take down a significant chunk of our grid is available and can be done. If it is taken down, it will take months for these major components to even be brought back online. What would happen if 5% of the grid would go down? Millions would die. I'm just saying.
No, exactly right. I mean, you know, you take any town USA, and between 60 and 75% of the grid is emergency services. So a lot of that's hospitals, a lot of that's ventilators, a lot of that is, you know, real serious type things. And by the way, that's outside of the hospitals. That's at homes too.
Exactly. And you're talking about in the major cities, the food supply and everything else. Let's just say the Biden administration is innocent and this is all circumstantial evidence. You still have natural disasters. Everything that we have talked about is the balancing authority on the grid is having a nightmare trying to put solar and wind and keep the grid balanced. The balancing authorities in the U.S., man, those are worse than air traffic controllers. I feel sorry for those guys. They've got to have an Alcoholics Anonymous hotline for those guys trying to keep the grid up. They do a great job. But you put in the Summer of Love 2.0 coming up, there is a potential for some very bad things to happen this year. And you may want to cut some of this out of your podcast.
Oh, no. Podcast, we don't cut anything. You know, yeah. So we got some FCC standards for the radio we got to still adhere by. But
anyway, you can see where I'm going with this.
Now, I can, you know.
I want your listeners to be prepared for natural disasters. And if something should happen, everything that I told you is public knowledge. But why in the world would the UN and the NGOs funded by the U.S. really have the understanding of Secretary Mayorkas, the head of Homeland Security, aware that we now have all these military-aged Chinese men in and capable of controlling the grid? There's a lot of questions to be asked.
There's a good chance that they could take down the grid next week and everybody would blame the solar flares, you know, and then the other half would blame China. And so there's also that whole side of things too, is that that's when you think about what people have to rely on just to live, that should scare the average person into just getting a backup generator, let alone any sort of food provisions and everything else.
Well, it's a system, a backup generation system, mm-hmm. and or because now you got to think about water. Is it, do you have a distiller? Do you have water tablets? Do you have access to mm-hmm. water? You're going to need a minimum of a 30-day, everybody needs a 72-hour bag. Period. You need to be able to get out of your house in case a tornado gets. You got to be able to get into a shelter and get a 72-hour bag. We now need a 30-day supply of food and water. And because of over 250, ballpark number, whatever the number is, food processing plants in the United States have suddenly combusted since Biden has taken office, you need a food supply for, my estimation, is 6 months. You've got to be able to eat for 6 months.
What are you doing, by the way, for food, if I may ask?
I've got a garden started. I've got fruit trees, dwarf trees. I've got canned goods, a rotation system put in. None of this was started until Biden took office. And I didn't even think that it was going to be a problem then. I didn't think that the government would have this kind of a problem.
It's I did. For me, it was COVID.
COVID, thank you. COVID really
when COVID happened, I ramped up everything. And so, you know, it wasn't so much even the president, because a lot of the prep started, to be honest, it might have been Bush, because of the banker bailouts in 2008, yeah. is really when I started noticing a little bit different of the world. And so this is not, you know, folks, you got to ask yourself, you know, what would happen if all of a sudden you couldn't turn your light switch on? I mean, in all honesty, what would happen if your water didn't work? To me, here's the most important question you ask, and this is what really opened up my eyes a lot. If the shit hit the fan, is my neighbor going to come help me or kill me? Like, that's a legitimate question that people, because it's no longer love thy neighbor. People, we live in a different world where ethics are now subjective and everything. And to me, that's as basic a question as it comes. You know, you want to be around like-minded person. Is your neighbor, do you even know their name? Do you even know your neighbor's last name? Do you even know their kids? You know, that type of, and most people don't. So that's, anyway, so I'm not trying to doom and gloom people either by any means.
No.
But, you know, the whole Mormon faith is based on preparation. They actually have, every week they have to have some sort of checklist to put stuff down in the bunker, put stuff.
I love reading about religions, and I have read the Book of Mormon. I've read the Quran. I've held up my Bible for your podcast listeners. I know what I believe. I also believe that I don't have the right to judge other people for their religions. But on the other hand, I love the Mormon folks, everybody out of, I worked for Novell, and my boss, I loved going out there, and the preparations that they do as a community are phenomenal. And that need, those are resources by the LDS Church, are very good resources. And I applaud them for teaching them.
I do too. That's why I bring it up, is because it was one of the more remarkable, the 52 weeks where every week it's a, you know, whatever it is, toilet paper, the next week it's this provision, the next week right. It's this. It's absolutely fantastic. You know, you talked about the Quran, you showed the Bible, and, you know, we're talking about some of the geopolitical things. And there are a lot of people that do say every war is a banker war.
Exactly. And
when you take a look at the one common theme that all the religions have, is the money changers. And, you know, when you take a look at the Quran, I think in the Muslim faith, they had to like change a bunch of things to make it like kosher now to get loans, because debt is illegal in their religion or something like that. And so to me, that's part of it too, because when you start talking about debt and you start talking about investing and financing, that does play a big part of this right. evolution and change that we've had. You know, in behind the scenes, you know, the ESG and the DEI and a lot of the alphabets have been playing their part. Do you get into that in your program? Do you get into some of the little alphabet agencies and the subjective things? ESG?
In my daily show with Michael Tanner is my co-host on my daily show. And
how long's your daily show?
15 to 30 minutes.
Okay.
Depending on the news day and the news cycle. And we're averaging about a million reads of the transcribes and videos and everything else on the episode. So people are hungry for real news, and they are hungry for fun. So having a great young millennial kind of guy is a good mix between an old, goofy, fat guy like me and a young millennial like him. It turns out to be pretty good. People want knowledge.
It's interesting about, you know, the ESG thing, because, you know, the younger generation, they really like it, because, you know, in a vacuum, yeah, it's great, you know, but everything in a vacuum is fantastic. The older generation is a little more wise because of the life experience to say, yeah, listen, we all want lemonade and puppies and unicorns, but
Right.
at the end of the day, how are we going to do that? I mean, if we have a good plan,
Yeah.
sure, but we can't just do it because it's part of the
Well,
happiness machine.
boy, you bring up ESG and investing and hypocrisy, and you get me worked up again on that one. ESG did do a great job getting the oil and gas companies did not do a great job for a long term. And when they had money, they would just go out and they would buy all the right. They would do everything. They would drill. They would try to get production up. And they were not very good with shareholder value for years. The ESG movement, which, the environmental socialist as
Governance.
and governance, did a great job in trying to get back so that the governance aspect of it did give money back to the shareholders. And they've done a fantastic job. Now, ESG hypocrisy from BlackRock, from all of these other folks, have just driven me nuts. BlackRock had been investing in oil and gas pipelines in the Middle East and saying that they weren't investing in oil and gas. And then you had all these other ones that were hiding behind the fact that they were trying to make money. In 2000, first half of 2022, I believe the numbers were BlackRock lost $1.7 trillion in the first half of the year due to their ESG funds. Suddenly, here we are in 2024, it's okay for them to be investing in oil and gas. And it's because Texas stood up to BlackRock and said, we're getting rid of BlackRock on our fund. They pulled, I believe it was $17 billion out of their fund. I have to
Something
go
like that, yeah.
some nice number out of BlackRock saying, if you're not investing in oil and gas and admit to it, we don't really need you.
Yeah,
And I
Oklahoma was
applaud
trying
that.
the same.
I applaud that.
Yeah, I do too.
Be ethical. That's all I'm asking.
Have you got time for one more? I know we're up against the clock here, so I'm taking a look here at our time, and I didn't re I've been following ESG for a long time, and we even have that brand ESG University, and I do some consulting on it and I do some speaking on it. And I'm not a fan of ESG. I understand the vacuum, how it works in a vacuum. And listen, everybody wants to recycle, and
Right.
I there's some very positives that come with it, but I think the marketplace takes care of that anyways. So I don't understand a lot of that. I didn't realize there was a positive for the oil and gas industry through the governance side
Yep.
initially. So that was the dangle. That's how the oil
Yep.
and gas industry got lured in. That was the siren, if you will, the siren song. Because all of a sudden around 2019, the end of 2019, right
Yep.
before COVID, that's when it flipped on them then.
Yep.
Because that's when it really started. So that makes sense. I didn't realize. I've been trying to figure out this whole, because it seems it didn't come out of nowhere, but it
Right.
ramped up shock and awe out of nowhere. And that seems to be a lot of, when we look at what we're dealing with, the shock and awe. That's what worries me about the grid coming up, to be honest. The
Yep.
shock and awe that COVID brought in, and I saw the way that my elected leaders behaved. I saw the way my local leadership behaved, but more importantly, I saw how my local churches behaved. And everybody did what the government said, everybody. And things might have happened different in different communities, but what my eyes saw was I saw a shock and awe, and everybody was complacent and compliant. And if you weren't,
It won't happen this time. And
no, I
that's.
don't think so. I think this next time, people like me and people like others are going to be like, okay, now it's 72-hour go bag. It's my this and that, and now
And
it's
here's what's going
where
to
we're at.
happen though. If you are a wolf in the corner, just what happens to a wolf in the corner? They get nuts.
Yeah.
The Politicians, and I'm talking Republicans and rhinos that are in power right now, are going to do anything that they can to stay in power. It is going to, you think the summer of love in 2020 was a summer of violent BLM protests, not Bureau of Land Management, the BLM
Yeah.
riots. This is going to be a very bad compare. That's going to be a warm-up.
You got my curiosity piqued because, up till now, it's been pretty quiet. Honestly, up till now, when you take a look at the past 15, 20 years, the election cycles by now, they're buzzing pretty good. And
Right.
it's been really quiet. That means something's coming.
Something big is
I think
coming,
so.
and it's not good. The thing that I feel sorry for are folks that are not waking up. And do the folks, if you sit back, and yes, we need to be ready to help our local community people out as much as we possibly can. Stand and be a light for those around you. That's where we have to really, if we can come together in our local, in the group, the Americans for Prosperity are a wonderful group. I'm going to send some intro letters to you as well too. Genevieve Collins is the director for Texas, and I've interviewed her on the podcast, and I love what they're standing for is that they're going out and trying to say, get involved in your local elections and make a difference. It doesn't do any good for you and I to sit on the crude life and talk about a podcast. It's what happens when we go out that door.
Right.
It is what you do. You can help people. You and I maybe think about if somebody says, hey, wait a minute, I'm gonna go, you showed your Jackery or your whatever the brand that is. Maybe we just save somebody from a hardship, but if they go buy a Jackery and if they want to sponsor the show next time, we'll be glad to capitalize and let them do that. But the thing is, think about the positive conversations and energy people can have.
That's one of the reasons why the crude life, what we would do with radio and magazines and all the different medias, is because of that. And then the other reason that we would shorten a lot of these interviews, like this interview right now, will probably not be more than 4 minutes long in segments on the radio. And part of that is because, number one, oil and gas talk is pretty boring. And number two, political talk is very triggering now. And number, yeah, and number three, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives is a very successful show. So people like boom, 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 people like the quick.
Right.
And so what we've done is say, listen, because on the radio, you get people who are not in the oil and gas industry, if you can just keep them for 4 minutes at a time, they might go listen to the longer interview later that night. But at least they get a positive snapshot of
Yep.
something that we're talking about. Maybe it's carbon capture. Maybe it's the curvature of a valve, because if you take it out, the emissions
Right.
go down. I mean, that's an incredibly boring
I
scientific
don't understand.
research paper that's really cool.
I don't understand why my podcast, we produce 20 other podcasts, and on Michael and I, and I don't understand why our podcast and my long form version of Conversations in Energy with Stu Turley. Those are 96% listen rates on a podcast. That is phenomenal for
It
someone
is.
to listen to a podcast for that long. Some have been 2 hours, some have been 15 minutes, some have, but you sit back and take a look, and I've got that as a rating for millions of downloads, and you sit there and go, holy smokes, Batman, people listen to this stuff.
And just to give people an idea about some of the things we're talking about, I mean, I mentioned earlier that there's been several times where I've spiked in the top 100 of
Which is
iHeartRadio during the
fantastic.
podcast. Yeah, it is. It's very fantastic. But that's nothing to do with me. It's to do with the guest. It's like in WrestleMania 3, 93,000 people didn't come to watch Hulk Hogan. They came to watch Andre the Giant. So just because it's positioned in it, well, nobody's ever watched 93,000 people since then. They all came to watch Andre. And I mean, they wanted to see Hulk beat Andre. But my point is that it isn't the crude life.
I love Andre the Giant.
I do too. Absolutely love that.
Especially when he was beat by the pirate, Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah, I was going to say, when he said the Princess Bride is my favorite one.
And he gets choked from behind and he says, sleep well and dream of large women. I loved Andre the Giant.
I like no more rhymes and I mean it. Does anybody want a peanut? That's so good. But so to your point, to just speak to the choir or just to throw red meat at an audience that you know is going to accept your message, that's actually unsustainable. That's actually just treading water or just, you know, on a stationary, it's a stationary bicycle.
Right.
You know, you're all just sitting around on Pelotons. You're not going anywhere. Sorry, Peloton. No offense. That wasn't a stationary bike. You're the modern one, you know. You're kind of the iPad of the phones. iPhones of the phones. But so let's give your daily a plug, because if you're doing something every day,
yep,
you're that number one says commitment, and number two that says frequency. No wonder you have the audience you have, because I do a daily as well, but it's only 3.5 minutes long, and it's for like 20 radio stations, and it airs 3 times a day. It's called appointment listening. Well, the county commissioner of Bowman County out in North Dakota, I ran into him at a conference one. Like literally the population of the county is like 600 people for the whole county. And he's a farmer. And he goes, hey, crude life. He goes, hey, when the crude life's on, as soon as it's over, it's time to go in for dinner, because it airs at like 5:15 or something like that. Right. He's out in the barn. And so it's appointment listening. But we do a number of different things, but for you, does it air at the same time every day? Or to explain your deal, because a daily frequency, man, you really can build an audience. You can.
We do, but I mix it. We have, the way that we do this is we actually have the daily show. We film, Michael and I will film every night, the night before.
Oh, it's video too.
A video too.
Oh,
so we not only video, we transcribe, we publish out on all channels natively, our own Substack. It goes to our website. We average 35,000 to 50,000 people a day on the site. And so when you sit back and take a look at the news stories, it's video every day. And what I've found is in the last several months, I've been doing my long form podcast where I interview CEOs, and we drop those in on Friday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the daily show. The weekly recap is on Saturdays. And so on Fridays and Sundays, I release 2 long form podcast. So we actually have material being released every day. And so we're finding that the long form podcast, when I go live on LinkedIn, X, and YouTube, all those are now native on those platforms. And then they're transcribed and put out onto the website, so that the media, most people, when they put their media out there, they put it out and publish it in sound. It only goes to the podcast channels, which is, Spotify or Apple all those. But I've blended it and I've found a way around the Google algorithms, because Google does not like my thought process. They don't like the fact that I believe in saving the whales, and I believe oil and gas can save humanity and the whales again. Mm-hmm. And I can get around the Google Analytics by the way that I now have fanned all this out. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. It's, we were going to change the crude life to something more energy driven several years ago, but we had a plan. We had a different plan. And folks, just so you know, there's a lot of truth behind what we're talking about. Like if you have the word chemical in your company name, you are 5 years behind the curve.
Exactly.
Chemical is one of those words that gets flagged, just like
Exactly.
oil, just like gas, just like cigarette, just like gun. In fact, it's amazing on social media, all the self-censorship that's going on. People don't even use the word gun anymore. They say pew pew.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't even say like I'm whatever, you're not even using it nefariously. You're just using it as a line item
Oh
type thing.
no. And so when I can see Google, and in fact, I was demonstrating to a potential sponsor how Google shuts me down. And I kid you not, I kid you not, in a live demonstration, I said, watch this. And I brought up one of my screens. I have four offices, and in my four offices, I have eight monitors in each one. And I bring up one of the monitors. And I show them and say, look, here's Google Analytics showing I've got one person on my site. I bring it up and I say, oh, by the way, look, around the world, there's 5,000 right now on the site right now. Wow. I drill down. Oh, look, it's Langley. Oh, wow. And I drill down to Langley, and this is honest truth. All of my systems shut down. What's in Langley? So, anyway, I have
I think
gotten
that's where they filmed
around.
the X-Files, didn't they?
I have gotten
Show the
around to
Americans.
And so the way to get around Google is a very methodical system, and now our following is global. We're everywhere. We're in, and I have had guests. I'll tell you, Jason, you can't buy this kind of entertainment. When I had an executive call me up, he says, your podcast just aired, and I was at a different meeting at a luncheon, and a guy came up and said, I just saw your interview. He goes, that is wild. He
You're
goes,
crazy.
that's reach. Isn't that fun?
It is. I mean, it's crazy, and that's getting back to where we're going with this whole thing originally, which is educating people because, well, because really we live in a world where we're all connected, and the more
Yes.
connected we get, the more silos that we create, these things that aren't ecumenical. Or they're not, they don't spread the word, if you will.
Right.
And that's one of the things that if I have any message that I'd like to leave with, and I'll ask for your final thoughts next, but is for the industry to not only remember who your end user is, your end customer. So when you think about, whether it's sponsoring a bowl game or your language towards somebody or your approach towards somebody, how you're speaking, that sort of thing. Almost everybody is an end user of your product. I mean, whether they use a toothbrush or turn the light switch on, they're an end user. So have a little bit of customer respect for your end user, number one. And number two, I do understand how the government and the oil and gas industry has had to work hand in hand for so long. So there has been this kind of this back and forth egocentric thing that was been created. But we're no longer in a world where we get delegated things too. We have to cooperate. We have to
Right.
cooperate together. And so I think if the leadership in the oil and gas industry, if they can understand a couple things like that, I actually think the industry could flourish once again and be back to the Wildcat days, the Dallas JR days, the what's his John James Dean days, Giant, the whole deal. So,
I
but
don't know that, and I'm gonna kind of laugh with you here for a second. I think it'd be great, but on the other hand, I don't think we're ever gonna go back to the wildcatting because I think and to bring this back into a circle, I think the ESG movement did hit the CEOs to give back to the shareholders enough
yeah.
that the uncontrolled drilling that used to happen is not there. Here's where I want to leave this last
Yeah.
thought. I'm all about reclamation. I'm all about land reclamation in the orphan wells, Texas and the Balkans. up in that area. All in the U.S. are taking care of their orphan wells, and they're doing what they have good regulations coming in. What about the wind farms? The poor farmers are great agriculture, and the people that are getting saddled with those wind farms and the solar panels are absolutely getting stuck with the reclamation on these things. And I've got a whole new business that's coming together to try to figure out how to help reclimate wind, solar, and oil and gas so that we can get land back to the way it was so that we can have it pass it on for further generations. So anyway.
Oh, we got to talk more about this. This is a
You and I need to chat again. I need you on
The
my
wind
podcast
turbine
too.
thing, they made some progress in Illinois, getting some legislation done and a few things like that. But that's the one thing a lot of people don't understand is that I always give the example when you drive by and you see one of those barns that look like if a squirrel ran on it, it would fall over. That's what's going to happen to those wind turbines because the farmer's responsible for taking care of it, and he's not going to. Farmer's not going to take care of it. No way. It's just going to
See,
sit there until it falls over.
the ESG hypocrisy has really driven me nuts for a long time. When people ask, say, how long does a windmill last? And you walk up and say, how long does a wind farm last? And it's not how long does a chuck, chuck, wood, chuck wood. It's actually how long does a wind farm last? And everybody says, oh, 30 years. Hogwash. It barely lasts 7 to 8. They're fiscally irresponsible from day one. But what happens is the mean time between failure on a wind farm, not even ocean, we're talking just land, is less than 8 years. It means that it is ratepayers have to get increases at the 8 year mark, even with subsidies, because they're now having to come in and redo these things. Guess what happened with the Biden administration and the, as Dan Bongino called, the Porculus bill. What they're doing is they're now allowing those things in 4 years to redo wind farms, and it now qualifies again for double dipping and triple dipping on those wind farms. So what me they're kicking the can down the road, and those things are going to die a horrible, miserable death sooner. And when they do, they're going to be horrifically a problem for the landowners. This is a problem that's about 4 years away that is absolutely going to be horrific.
It's going to be unbelievable. I mean, let alone that we don't even know how to recycle these things yet. The landfills are rejecting them now. So, well, any final thoughts here? I mean, it's almost we're going on a couple
Thank
hours,
you
so we should
so much.
probably, I could
I
talk all day.
appreciate you. I appreciate everything that you're doing, and I really want to give you a shout out for everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you much. Where can people find your stuff?
EnergyNewsbeat.com,
Great.
and you can find all of my stuff. I'm on the Energy Realities every Monday morning live with David Blackman, Substack author. He's on the Telegraph. He's a very well-known Irina Slav. She is from Bulgaria and a very well-known energy author. And then we have Tammy Nemeth on there. And every week we have great guests. We're on like episode 100 on that one. I'm on 550 episodes of my other podcast. So we're off and running.
All right. Well, till next time, folks. We'll see ya.